Do I need a life coach? You're listening to episode 94 with Rhiannon Bush. Welcome to the Do I Need a Life Coach podcast. We're here to discuss the ins and outs of the life coaching industry and give you tools to use to see for yourself. I'm your host, Rhiannon Bush, mother, management consultant, and a passionate, certified life coach. Well, hello, my friends. How is your week going? It is getting colder here in Tassie, and I'm sorry I always talk about the weather. It's just, I don't know, seems to be a very prominent part of my life. And also everything else is just fairly consistent, which is so unlike my life. My life pre-kids was really crazy and I was doing different things all the time, and it's kind of nice actually. Things have really settled and it's like my life is just, you know, working and the kids. And I mean, the kids are enough change for anyone, anyone who has kids. But yeah, it's just so, you know, the weather is very important when you've got two young kids, because anyone who has young kids knows that when they're in a house and things are crazy, it's just like, whoa. And you know, they've got all this energy. They've got so much energy all the time. And so to run them out and to, yeah, get them outside is, oh, very important for my mental health anyway, and theirs as well. So the weather's important. I don't really know what else to update you on at the moment, but I had a request from a lady by the name of Claire. So thank you so much, Claire, for reaching out. So Claire is in Camperdown in Sydney, and she wanted to talk about working out. And if you followed me on Instagram, for instance, you will see very clearly that I am not an athlete, but exercise is something that I really value. And I actually enjoy it when I get into the swing of it, and when I'm not in the swing of it, you know, it's an uphill battle. And it just seems like this dark storm cloud that I dread and I get really nervous about and I get really anxious about, and then I put it off and put it off and put it off. And then as soon as I'm able to kind of get over that and get back in the gym or get back into exercise of some kind, the momentum picks up again and it's all happy days again from there. And then I'm on that trajectory with that momentum. So my life definitely ebbs and flows between the two, but I do like to try and keep a consistent workout routine. And so this episode is for you, Claire. Thank you so much for reaching out. I went into the gym, you know, 4 days a week when I was in my 20s, pre-kids. And honestly, at that time of my life, it was probably to counteract the drinking and socializing and eating that I was doing. But because of that, it was more of a punishment. It wasn't inspiring or to achieve goals. It was a punishment. And that also came with a lot of sort of pride and progress, because I was making progress and I was getting stronger and I was doing things that I hadn't been able to do before. And that's always really validating for anyone who does like yoga or martial art or, you know, anything really where you do it and do it and do it. And then you see progression and you can remember where you were, and then you find out you can do stuff. That's a really, really validating feeling. And the gym became that for me more and more the more I was in there. So it started out being a negative thing and quite punishing. And it was sort of like, oh, I feel like I should do that, so I'm going to, and I drag my butt there. It evolved and it became more positive. And I always wondered if I could become one of those people who was like a gym junkie or got addicted to exercise. But it was so out of my realm of understanding and appreciation. I was always like the sorts of people that are like, oh no, I'm a gym junkie and I'm addicted. And you'd take one look at them and know that that was true. I was always like, oh, you're a little crazy and you're a rare breed. But let me be really clear. I never ever with the gym or my workouts got to that level. I've never been a gym junkie and I never really got addicted, but it definitely became an integrated part of my life where if I found I didn't move physically, I didn't feel good. And I can recognize when I don't feel good. And often it is because I haven't moved my body. And that sometimes in life when things are a little bit taxing or I'm not sleeping very well or whatever, that might just be a walk. That just might be an early morning walk to clear my head and get my body moving, which gets my diaphragm moving, which gets my lungs expanding a little bit more, which gets me more oxygen in my body, which, you know, it's this cascading kind of effect. But other times it was definitely the whole, no, like get in the gym and really sweat one out. So it's been really a great journey for me to recognize mentally what's going on and then trying to understand how that goes with my physical, what I've done physically or not. And there is 9 times out of 10 a very direct correlation. There's been very few times where I've dragged myself to the gym and I've really struggled to get there, and I have got there and I've stopped and gone, no, I shouldn't have come. That has happened a handful of times, and by handful, I'd say three from memory, because every other time I'll get there, even though I don't want to, and it's hard, and I'll do my workout, and then I'm like, I regret that workout. Said nobody ever, ever. So it's one of those things that it's got so many health benefits that it, yeah, I was very adamant about wanting it to become an integrated part of my life, but it was never to an extent of a lot of other people that I see when I'm in the gym. And the way that that comes out, like in terms of me not moving my body or not getting what I physically need, I get frustrated, I get angsty, I can be really narky, and it's just not a pleasant way to feel. And it's definitely not pleasant for those around me. And it took me a long time to learn how to do that sustainably, like to understand, oh, okay, actually I'm snappy, or I'm doing this because I haven't moved my body. And that it did take a long time for me to learn how to sustainably get into the gym and value myself enough to understand that my health is important and my physical activity is a huge pathway for my mental health and well-being, and my physical health and well-being as well. So I don't know if you've ever thought about this in great detail, but when I was taught this, it had a huge impact on me. And the results that I've been able to get in my life based on how I was feeling was also like, I've always been a very emotionally driven person is what I'm trying to say. I can walk into a room and people know how I'm feeling just from looking at me and feeling my energy. I wear it all over me, even when sometimes that's not necessarily a good thing, but I struggle to hide how my emotions are making me feel. And when I learned about the momentum of emotions, it was an absolute game changer. And the reason it was a game changer was because I was able to find that level of detachment between what I was feeling and what I actually wanted to do. So my adult brain, my clever brain, would be like, you, Rhiannon, get in the gym. You need to move your body. It's healthy. You'll feel better in every way, physically, mentally, and therefore spiritually. But my animal brain, or my lazy brain, as I call it sometimes, it's not lazy at all. It's just very like conditioned to want what it wants. You know, that part of my brain would be saying, but I don't want to. So despite knowing what was good for me and what wasn't, I was still very much more inclined to sit down and watch television and eat bad food than actually do the thing that I knew would serve me longer term. And being an all or nothing person, which I am, it doesn't really serve me either. So for instance, I went through a period of my life trying to restrict what I ate to an 8-hour window a day. So a lot of the time it looked like me stopping at 3 p.m. in the afternoon. I wouldn't eat until 7 a.m. the following day. And it was to give my body a break. There's lots of research on how that resets a lot of your hormones and things internally. And it definitely made myself feel better. I slept better. I felt better. And it was great. And also, I know myself well enough to know that I love sitting and eating. Let's be honest, I really do. I like sitting down with, I don't know, my favorite little treaty and watching something on television. Like that is really like relaxing for me. I love it. And what I learned during this sort of fasting period was that if I was really hungry, which I often was at dinner time, but I said, oh, well, I'm really hungry and I'll have a really small meal, I couldn't do it. That small meal became a small meal, and then some Bickies and cheese, and then a cup of tea, and then some chocolate, by which time I had eaten my entire daily calorie intake in one sitting, and the cycle would repeat itself. So take that back to my 20s, it would be I would do that, I would get in the gym first thing the next morning, and I would punish myself, and then I would go about my day. The problem with being an all or nothing person is that I didn't want to be that way. I wanted to be able to have that self-control where I could have a little meal and enjoy it, but stick to that and that be enough. So instead of it being an all or nothing, it needed to be a little more or a little less. And to do that is exactly where this emotional momentum played a big role in my ability to change and shift that. So I do think to create sustainable change requires a level of incremental and manageable change. And it's something we talk a lot about in coaching around our comfort zone and how to expand our comfort zone. We refrain in coaching from using language like jump outside your comfort zone, because often when you do something abrupt and you jump outside of your comfort zone, it's a matter of time before you jump straight back in, because it's so different and so uncomfortable that you can't sustain it long term. So when you go little by little, you are able to manage and adjust so that change instead becomes an expansion of your comfort zone gradually and over time, instead of it being this really abrupt full-on change that triggers your fight or flight response, which means you end up being so uncomfortable you revert straight back into how you were doing things before, and often much more intensified. So an example, and I've been there, done that, is when you think about someone who's like on a diet, for instance. So they would work up the courage to make a plan, go on the diet, and then after a certain amount of time, might be a day, might be 4 days, might be a week, might be a couple of weeks, they start completely binging again, but they actually binge so much worse than they did in the first place, because it's almost like they're overcompensating for something that just happened where they've got like all of that time to make up for, and so they do. It doesn't work. The brain just, it needs to get back to that level of comfort, and therefore you end up overcompensating and yeah, it doesn't serve in the long term. So to do these gradual and incremental changes bit by bit by bit is really important. And it's also really important to understand what you're having emotions about. So the thoughts that are triggering those emotions. And as I've spoken about this quite extensively, it's extremely difficult when your thoughts are so unconsciously programmed because they've been there for such a long time. You not only recognize what the thought is, you also can't recognize the emotion. So you're just sort of going about that your day because that's your baseline. That's normal. But to actually bring those thoughts to conscious awareness and unpack the emotion that it's creating, oh, if you can master that, you can master anything, right? You can literally master anything. It's also important, before we start going through this exercise, to understand the different movement and momentum emotions have. So for instance, anger is red hot. When people are angry, they lash out and they often can't remember what happened in that moment. So if you talk to anyone who's been in a fight, like a bar fight or I don't know, any kind of fight, or someone who's been triggered by something so brutally that it sparks significant anger, it's such an all intense body experience. It's all consuming. But anger has massive momentum, huge energy. I would prefer to work with a client who's angry than work with a client who's apathetic any day, because anger has movement. It's all consuming, it's energy. Whereas apathy is no energy. The energy is just completely sucked out of it. So think about depression. Think about anxiety. Anxiety has more movement than depression does. Somebody who's anxious is likely to be on high alert and, you know, eyes, deer in the headlight kind of eyes, and be quite frightened and frantic. Whereas depression is just this stagnant heaviness. And maybe for you it's different, but understanding the rainbow of emotions you personally feel every day and the emotions you experience throughout your day, the sort of roadmap of your feelings, the trajectory of, is so helpful. It's like doing an emotions audit. So if you can sit down after this podcast and go through your day in your mind's eye, think about your day from the second you wake up, an average day, go through what you feel when you go through your day. So you wake up, you might have a shower, you go get breakfast, you get ready, you leave the house, you commute to work, you go through your day at work, depending on meetings, people, what you're doing at work might change your emotional state, but you then go to the gym. From the gym, you go home, you have dinner, you might then do some work, or you might then chill out, or you might go and see some friends, or you might, you know, whatever it is, but go through an average routine that you have. And then emotionally track yourself throughout the days. You know, what emotions are you predominantly experiencing? Or are you even aware of what they are? Most people, I think, would say no, they aren't. And that's okay. That's totally fine. It's very much how our brains are wired, because emotions require conscious energy to shift out of our norm. And when we're aware of them, then we can change them. But also, this is why people are miserable. Because they're going through the motions, they're on the hamster wheel, they're doing the same thing day in, day out. And because they don't bring their emotional awareness to the forefront of their mind to make a plan to change it, then they don't get the things that they need, the spice of life. And most people are emotional beings. Even if you look at someone who can't express their emotions or who seems quite stoic or reserved, everybody is driven by their emotional state. We all want to feel good. We all want to feel happy and fulfilled and satisfied. We all want to feel like we're growing and contributing, and you know, they're basic needs that we meet. We don't want to feel angsty or depressed or anxious or frustrated or bored. Bored, I think, for me is one of those emotions I hate. I would prefer to be almost anything other than bored. I hate being bored. And it takes a lot for me to be bored. And there is scientific evidence to say that boredom is actually really good for creativity. But I think when you're consistently bored, when you're lacking challenge, when you're lacking growth, for me, that's a state that I really fear being in. So I'll do anything to not feel bored. And that even means feeling really challenged or anxious or whatever it is, because I'm trying to achieve more or grow personally, which often comes with a whole plethora of other emotions that may not be pleasant, but I would rather feel those negative emotions than I would boredom. But again, that's another part of this exercise, right? So we need and we want to be challenged, but challenge is uncomfortable. And if the discomfort is too much with the current comfort zone that we are living in, our current baseline, as I talked about a second ago, you know, we want to go to a place where we are feeling more positive emotions on the daily basis. You know, if we are in a place where we're feeling apathetic, depressed, lonely, or any other emotion that's really stagnant for you, then change won't happen unless there's sort of an abrupt shift. And the worst part about stagnant emotions is that the more you feel stagnant emotions and stagnated, the more that perpetuates. So I heard somebody say once, like, a body that moves wants to move and a body that doesn't move doesn't want to move. And I feel like that is so true. When I'm in the gym and I'm moving, I actually am so much more energetic and active and I do more and more and more. When I'm in those phases of my life where I'm a bit tired and I'm trying to, you know, quote unquote, look after myself, which is totally not what it is, but then I don't move my body is actually really happy not to and do less and less and less, which is definitely not good long term, I don't think. So first step, do an emotional audit. What are the rainbow of emotions that you feel on a daily basis? Are you happy with that or are you dissatisfied with that? If you're happy with that, fantastic. Lock it in, Eddie. If you are unhappy with that, why is that? What result is that causing in your life that you are not satisfied with? And then obviously, what do you want to feel instead? And also, what would you prefer to feel, but then what would you prefer to feel to that? So as I was saying, I don't like to feel bored. But do I like to feel like challenged and frustrated and overwhelmed as well? No. But I'd prefer that to boredom. But what would I prefer more than frustrated? Can you see that there's like a trajectory of emotions? It's a spectrum. So just because you're not feeling one negative thing doesn't mean you're not going to feel another negative thing. But in saying that, you're also in a state where you can build and build and build. And as you work your way up the ladder of emotions, you're going to get to those ones that are like, okay, I'm feeling challenged right now, but I'm actually thriving in that challenge. I'm enjoying that. I'm enjoying this thing that we've got going where I'm growing and I'm learning and I'm not in a state of overwhelm. You know, it's all about perspective. When it comes to my time at the gym, I marvel in it. And the longer I do it, the more I realize how much I gain in confidence, in appreciation, in self-respect, and just feeling like I'm winning and achieving. And that isn't every single workout. But over time, to see the results is something that I truly value for my self-esteem, and that reinforcement of feeling like I'm treating myself the way that I should and the way that I want to. So for me to go from not exercising and almost punishing myself with what I ate and drank, I had to start incrementally understanding that I was feeling fairly self-conscious a lot of the time. I was using alcohol and sugar to feel better about myself, which only ever perpetuated the problem. And instead, I needed to change not only how I felt about myself and the way I wanted to treat myself, but also I needed to change the environments that I was spending my time in. So I was spending a lot of time at the pub, out to dinner, socializing, where I was putting things in my body that weren't helping me feel better about myself or about the way that I was treating myself. And so my flippancy around, oh, it'll be fine, or, oh, I can deal with it later, or, oh, it's just one day where I'm having ice cream, drink, dessert, bag of M&Ms, insert anything else here. You know, it had become a little more, I had to become more attentive and more sort of staggered in my approach. I didn't want to cut those things out completely, but I definitely couldn't keep going the way that I was. And for me to become like that, that looked like me being more organized with my eating. So I had to be more diligent around what I was putting in my mouth, when, how often, and what boundaries I needed to place around it. So I became a lot more strategic about what I was eating and when I could go and have those treats, when I couldn't. What had to precede me doing that was understanding that I was worth treating well. Correction, I am worth treating well. that my body, despite it not looking like Miranda Kerr or any other supermodel or being very genetically gifted human beings that exist out there, because I don't look like that, that didn't give me the right to hate on myself, punish myself, mistreat myself just because my body wasn't flawless. I had to get to a place of realizing that it's still my body and my body is worth looking after and my body is wonderful in the ways that it can make me feel and it can move and the way it supports me. And to go that extra step that I'm one with my body. My body isn't this separate thing to my mind. It's all one system. And that took a lot of work. That took life coaching work. That took therapy. That took a lot of things. And it took me finding ways to appreciate the things that I do love about my body. You know, whether that was the things that I could do in the gym, whether that was how I felt swimming in the ocean, whether that was how I felt in a dance studio or when I could sing, you know, what clothes I was wearing, how, you know, I was interacting with people, how my body bounced back despite the things I was putting in it, because I could see things that were good and I could also see things that I wanted to work on to live a healthier life with more energy and more vitality. So your journey will be very unique with this because your thoughts are your own, your experiences are your own, or they might not be. They might be somebody else's. Somebody else might have put those thoughts in your head or taught you how you should feel about yourself. Might have been a long time ago, might have been recently, but you get to choose what you listen to. You get to choose what you let infiltrate into your mind. You get to choose your story and how you want to feel about you, how you want to treat yourself. And this may be to do with your weight, your health, your career, your finances, your business, your family. This could be with anything to do with your life that you want to improve. You get to choose. You get to make it mean what you want to, and you get to tell yourself the story. But you can't do that until you first bring awareness to how you live each day right now and how that looks. Choose emotions to feel based on momentum that you need to do what you need to do, to have what you need to have, and to then become who you want to become. Make sure when you're choosing those emotions that you can identify the thoughts that you're thinking that generate the feelings. Don't judge the thought. Choose the thought strategically. Generate the feeling strategically with the thought. So be aware of the thoughts that are creating the emotions within you and whether they are serving you or whether they are not, whether they are moving you towards what you want or whether they're moving you away. Thank you so much to Claire for the reach out. Really appreciate you and I hope that this has helped. And I will see you next week. Thank you so much for joining me on this insightful journey today. If you've resonated with what we've discussed and feel inspired to make positive changes in your life, I'm here to support you. Remember, your transformation begins with a single step. If you're ready to take that step and explore the possibilities of working with a life coach, visit my website at www.riannonbush.com. There, you'll find more information about my coaching programs and how we can collaborate to achieve your goals. Your journey to a more fulfilling life starts now, so reach out today and let's create the life you dream about. Until next time, take care and keep moving forward.